Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, as I've said many times before, most relationships don't end with a bang. They're actually victims of what I call death by a thousand cuts. Another analogy that I also use is the frog in the boiling water, that if you throw a frog into a pot of boiling water, the theory is it will jump out immediately. But if you put it into a cooler water and gradually raise the temperature, the frog isn't even aware of the change and it'll eventually die. And this is actually what really happens in relationships, that things start to go a little off track and we don't really notice until finally they're so off track that somebody just says, done. So the question becomes, what signs of stress are actually happening in your relationship that you might not be aware of? And what toll is this incremental negative change taking on it? And better yet, is there anything you can do about it? So my guest, professor of couples and family therapy at Antioch University in Washington State and host of the Psychology in Seattle podcast, Kirk Honda, is going to help answer these questions. So, Kirk, thank you so much for being on the show, because I know this happens all the time. People go, well, things are okay, and then things aren't okay, and then suddenly somebody goes, yeah, I'm done. So, you know, what's that process? Because I know people, I don't know about you, but I always get people, and I always love this question, what's the secret to a happy relationship? And it's like, well, okay, don't mess up is one of the secrets. But in a recent piece that you wrote at Livestrong.com, you actually highlighted some of the biggest signs of trouble. And so I really wanted to talk about some of them, because I actually talk about John Gottman's The Four Horsemen on the show, but I'm not sure I've ever really fully explained. And you specifically talk about his Four Horsemen. So what are they, and why do they cause so much trouble?
Sure, yeah. So there's criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. And criticism has been found scientifically by John Gottman and his research team to be associated with shorter lifespan of a relationship and of marriage. So the greater amount of criticism, the shorter the relationship will be. Okay. And that criticism is pretty self-explanatory. So things like, you never listen to me, or or you're too sensitive. You know, these are
or
criticisms.
Why don't you do it this way, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically a message of there's something wrong with you. It's not that there's something wrong with your behavior or I wish you would do something differently. It's an attack on the person's character. And so that tends to be a behavior that can result in relationships taking a downturn.
Most people don't like that.
Right, it's very hurtful. And it actually can lead to, it hurts both people. It hurts the person who's being criticized, but it also hurts the person who's saying the criticism, because it leads to the second one, which is contempt. So the more criticism you have in your mind, and the more negativity you have toward your spouse, your partner, the more opportunity there is for contempt and resentment to build up in your mind. You know, you build this story or this narrative about your partner that is negative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to put a behavior on this one, because it's more of a vibe that you get from somebody. When you're with them, you just get the sense that they have a general story in their mind about you that says that you're a very difficult person to be with, or that you're very withholding or very cold, or you're very angry, or you're just a bad person, and they think that, you know.
Yeah, it, so it sounds, it sounds a It sounds a little bit like what happens with teenagers when it's like when they sigh and roll their eyes. It's like, oh, you are like the stupidest human being on the face of the planet. It's like, how can you be like so obtuse about life? That kind of thing, right?
Exactly. Yeah, rolling of the eyes is a good indication of that because it basically, because the first time you're annoyed with somebody, you're just like, oh, I'm being annoyed by this. But, you know, the 100 millionth time you're annoyed with someone, you tend to have a different reaction that conveys contempt and resentment.
Okay.
So that's the second one. The third one is defensiveness. Again, self-explanatory. Not listening, but and in my therapy office with my couples, I see this a lot in the beginning phase of therapy where as one person is talking, the other person is obviously trying to come up with an argument against what that person is saying. They're not really listening. They're just listening for things they can attack. You know, like for instance, let's say you have a wife who wants to ask her husband to turn off the lights when he leaves the room. You know, and often marital conflict and divorce can begin with stuff like this because
I know and I tell people it's not about the lights in the kitchen, but okay,
right, it's about the attachment and the way you communicate it. And so she might say something like, you know, hey, could you please turn off the lights when you leave the living room? And instead of saying something like, oh, okay, no problem, I must have not seen that, no problem, I'll do that. Instead of saying something like that, he might say something like, well, you leave the lights on all the time too, you know. It's that kind of defensive statement that can erode the love and attachment in a relationship. It's essentially that raising of the boiling water with the frog in it, as you referred to earlier. Every time you do it, you're just slowly raising, you know, that temperature.
Right. That little bit, that temperature. Oh, it's getting a little warm in here. So, the last one is an interesting one, and that's stonewalling. What is stonewalling?
So, again, the word stonewalling provides a metaphor. It's, you know, you're putting up a wall. You're withdrawing or you're passive-aggressively quiet. You know, I think everyone has been there. Everyone's been in all these, you know, I would like to imagine. And so, you know, you're upset and you don't really know what to do, and so you're just quiet. And your partner might be like, is something wrong? You know, are you okay? That's a very common example of stonewalling. But there are more overt ways, like, just flat out telling your spouse, I'm not going to talk to you. We're done. And I'm not going to talk to you. And I don't want to talk about this. And I don't want to talk with you. And it's sort of a last resort for people. And it can be very damaging to a relationship, as you can imagine.
Well, and I think it's really important because one of the dynamics that I've noticed in people, not just in couples, but in people, is that stonewalling, I think, can sometimes be assumed, but it's not really happening because I know this is the case in my marriage, is that my husband is what I call a digester. He has to take in information and then kind of let it percolate through. He actually has to think about stuff before we can engage in a conversation. And that can look like stonewalling, but that's not really what he's doing. And I happen to be somebody who thinks things through pretty quickly, and so we could be in a real bad shape if I didn't give him the time to kind of, okay, and taking the time to process something, I think is different from stonewalling, where somebody goes, yeah, I'm just not even going to talk to you about this anytime, anywhere, no matter how long you wait and let me process, right?
Absolutely. It's a matter of understanding each other and a matter of communicating that and a matter of giving people the benefit of the doubt, you know, learning through experience with him in that way. So you throw something out and he's quiet and your impulse is to be hurt by that and then to interpret that as him stonewalling and being a jerk on purpose. But But then you have to try to override that with your higher mind by telling yourself, look, based on past experience, he just has a different way of talking about this sort of thing. And he's not upset at me. He's taking the time to think about this, you know. But it's also incumbent on him to communicate and say, like, look, I'm being quiet, not because I'm upset, but because I'm thinking. So just give me a second. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. everyone has to participate in that.
Right, which is, you know, again, which is one of the challenges of being in a relationship is kind of to learn the rhythms of each other. And part of that is this communication. So, you know, we talk about this, and I'm going back to the first one, criticism, because people say, well, what am I supposed to do if I don't like what my partner is doing? How can I not criticize? You know? And so what's your answer to that? How does somebody not, you know, if something's bothering them, like the lights being left on in the, you know, when somebody leaves a room, is there a way to not criticize?
Absolutely. The word I like to use in therapy is the word request. I say, it sounds like you have a request. Is that what I'm hearing? And they'll be like, yeah, I have a request that they turn the lights on. So that's a very different word than criticize. It's you're asking someone to, and often, you know, depending on the families we come from when we grow up, we might have different sort of notions about how to communicate about these things. And so if you grew up in a family that communicated through criticism, because it's sort of implied, if you say to someone like, you always leave the lights on, there's a request that's implied in there, but it's not explicit, right? And so it's implied, I want you to turn the lights off, but it carries a cost because there's this hurtful statement within it. And people, it's vulnerable to make a request. You're taking a risk. You're saying, can you please turn off the lights? Because by implication, the other person could say, no, I don't want to. And so we all worry about that rejection. So we'd rather just blast someone with our anger than to open ourselves up to rejection. And so that's what I coach people to do, is to ask in a requesting tone.
Right, which you know, and one of the things that I tell people because of this, you know, it can be this criticism. You know, it's kind of like these aren't necessarily separate behaviors. You know, there's a criticism, then there's a defensiveness, I don't do that, or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then that can turn into stonewalling because I feel like I can never win, and then that just leads to contempt. So all of these can be, you know, it's like the big Gordian knot that all of these are connected, and where do we start pulling the string? And, you know, one of the things I tell people is when they're starting a conversation, try not to use the word you in the first three words of the sentence. You know, unless it's, I love you, you're wonderful, I'm glad you're in my life. Then you can use you all you want. But, you know, we have this habit of, you did this, or why did you? And there's criticism, and almost always the other person is going to be defensive. No, I didn't, or, you know, well, you do it too, kind of thing, and then we're off to the races.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have I statements, and which are the opposite, you know, which are the recommended. The way I like to teach it to couples is to say, it's a matter of how the other person receives it, not how you communicate it. So if you say the word you a lot in the way that you communicate your request, but the other person takes it well, then you guessed right.
Okay.
You know, so so it's a matter of empathy. Yeah, it's because you can use an I statement and really hurt someone's feelings. You know, so it's all that. So I try to tell people, look, you have to concentrate on two things. One is your needs, which are important. So if you have a need that you want to communicate, then that's important, and that's probably very present for you. You probably are very aware of that need. Well, the second thing you need to pay attention to is the other person's feelings, because in order for you to get your need met, the other person has to feel good about how you're asking for it, you know? If I walk up to the McDonald's cashier and say, give me a Big Mac and slap them across the face, I don't think they're going to be very open to give me that Big Mac, right?
Right, and they actually might just call the police, but that's okay, right, yeah.
Right, but if I say, can I please have a Big Mac, you know, then that's a different mm-hmm. thing. And so we all know what that's like outside of our marriages, but somehow in marriages we really want the other person to essentially make up the difference for us. You know, we don't want to have to be vulnerable, because when we're hurt by our spouse, it's very scary to us. So things like just having empathy, you know, just as you have this emerging thought in your mind, like, I want my spouse to listen more. I want my spouse to be on time. I want my spouse to help me with the kids more. I want my, you know, you have this emerging need. And then you have to think, okay, I've got that down. I know what I want, which is great. How can I communicate it in a way that the other person will hear and not freak out, you know? So that's,
well,
that's the key.
And on some cases, we can't always predict whether or not our partner is going to freak out. And I think this is when we get into, and this may be bordering on the contempt horseman, in the fact that people get into an argument about tone. Well, you said it this way. No, I didn't. You know, and I remember having a conversation with one of my clients, and what she said to him, I mean, I was there to hear it. And I said, and what she said to him, it was very difficult to see how that could be misinterpreted, but he was misinterpreting it. And so I had to say to her, I said, I get that this is what you're saying, but it's not what he's hearing. So we've got to back up and figure out where that disconnect is, because they just kept going around and around in a circle about this. And she goes, I don't know how else to say this. And I'm like, I got that, but he's hearing something completely different from what it is you're trying to say.
Right.
Which can really, it's like, but I don't know how else to say it. I mean, and it's sort of like, you know, I've heard people with the I statements too. And it's like, okay, that's a you statement attack all dressed up in I statement clothing. It's like, that was not an I statement. That was, you know, and it, what makes this so hard? What makes not bringing these horsemen in so challenging, especially in a marriage?
Well, it all has to do with human nature of avoiding pain and of not wanting to be scared, essentially. And when we were 4 and 7 and 10, we were, you know, children, and we would ask for things, or we would do things, or we would want things. And things didn't always go our way, you know, just by the nature of growing up. If you've, you know, if you hang around with kids long enough, you know that they have a lot of impulses that don't make any sense. And
we don't want them acting on, by the way, too. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, there's a lot of redirecting of kids, and there's a lot of denying kids things that they want. You know, they want ice cream every day. They want to take their friends' toys. They want to hit their brother over the head with a bat, you know, like it's all stuff that they have, so they have a wish, they have a request, you know, like, mommy, I have a request. Can I hit older brother over the head with a bat? And then, you know, and then they're shut down. And not only are they shut down in terms of just rejected, like, no, you can't do that, but they're often shamed for it. Like, what's wrong with you that you want to hit your brother over the head? And so we all have that legacy. We were all that kid who wanted to hit our brother over the head with a bat and were denied that. And so as an adult, whenever we have a need, there's this worry that we're going to be rejected and shamed. And so it's so much easier to preempt that fear and that hurt by attacking, you know, by by criticizing and yelling, you know, or giving the vibe that we're upset at the person. It's much more mature, shall I say, and more vulnerable to say something like, I don't know if this is me. So that's another thing, is you have to take responsibility whenever you do these things. You can't, you know, like with the light thing, let's just stick to that easy one. You know, you don't say something like, you have a problem with turning off the lights, and so therefore you need to turn off the lights. You know, it's more like, even though you might think that, outwardly you say, I have a thing about lights. And I don't know, maybe I got that from my dad, or maybe I'm just a little worried about the electricity bill. I don't know. But I have a thing about lights. Now, when you open up the conversation like that, that engages your spouse's empathy for you, because your spouse presumably loves you and doesn't want you to be in pain. And so when you say, I'm suffering right now because of this light thing, and then he might even just fill in the blanks and go like, oh, did I not turn off the lights? I'm sorry, I'll turn off the lights. You know, you're taking responsibility. You're not blaming him. You're saying it's all on me, even though you might be thinking.
This is something I have an issue with, and I'd really love your help with it.
Exactly. You're taking responsibility, and really that's the mature thing you do. And it works on kids too. You know, you're just like, so I really have a thing about toys being out. Could you help me put the toys back? You know, people care about other human beings, and if you engage that system, it's so much more smoother. So you got to start with that. And then you just say, so I just have a little request. And so you always have to make it smaller, because the receiver will always blow it up in their mind, because they're sensitive to rejection, because they were criticized as kids too. Right. And so you always have to say, look, it's just a tiny little request, no big deal, but I would love it if you turn off the lights. You know, it would just really make me much more relaxed, you know.
It's trying to turn it into a win-win, which I know is a little bit difficult, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. But I need to remind people that this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with Professor of Couples and Family Therapy and podcast host Kirk Honda about signs you should be on the lookout for that your relationship might be heading for trouble. And if you know that they're present in your relationship, I encourage you to take immediate action. Do not wait. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Take action now. You can give me a call at area code 919-924-0463, or you can shoot me an email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS coachingnc.com, and take advantage of my free, no obligation path to a fantastic marriage breakthrough strategy session. Because these behaviors, if you leave them, are going to do serious damage. That's why they're called the Four Horsemen. So back to talking about those, and going back to what you were saying, Kirk, about how we start a conversation and how critically important that is. And one of the things that I'm always working with my clients about is how to grab your emotional response or emotional reaction before you open your mouth, because that's when we seem to kind of get into a lot of trouble. Is something happens, I get upset, and I just go.
Right.
And that's kind of what you're talking about, right, in this very specific, mature way of, oh, what's going on? I have a problem. How can I get somebody to help me?
Right. Yeah, exactly. The typical sequence is something will annoy somebody or concern them, you know, that their spouse is doing, but they won't say anything right away because they'll either not feel comfortable or they'll try to just let it go. Mm-hmm. But then it happens a number of times, and then the spouse, the person finally is just like, I can't take it anymore. I have to say something, you know? And mm-hmm. it comes out in this unfiltered manner, you know, in this very emotionally reactive manner. That is what you're talking about. And so people, when I work with them, and, you know, you work with couples too, so I'm sure you do the same, is you have to notice these things early and make a plan for how you're going to open it. Because if you just react normally, most of us react dysfunctionally.
Right. And I try to tell my clients, you know, I don't aim for perfection because I don't think perfection exists. I aim for like 85 to 90% of the time. If you can open up a conversation well, then your relationship can absorb that 10 to 15% where it goes off track. You know, somebody gets caught off guard, something happens, they can't grab their emotional reactivity, maybe they're not feeling well, maybe they're really tired and something happens and they just can't do it. And I think this is really important to practice, but I guess you talked about being able to pay attention to it. And so what are some of the things that people can look for in terms of, are these behaviors happening? And by the way, I know everybody out there, can you hear him yelling? I can hear it. Well, I know when my partner's doing this. But that's part of the problem, is I need to know when I'm doing this. So how do people recognize these behaviors that they're doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess, you know, the general sort of lame advice is just to try to be as self-aware as possible. You know, some extreme measures might be to record your fights and listen back to them, which I've had people do, and maybe even ask a friend to listen to the recording and, like, identify what you're doing wrong, because you might not even be able to see it in the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes practice. That's why you and I are in business, Leslie, because if it just took some simple advice, then there wouldn't be a field called couples therapy. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time, and depending on, I've seen couples come to me who had wonderful childhoods and have a ton of empathy for other people. And they still struggle with this because our culture just doesn't talk about this enough. You know, we're a culture of either just talking about, you know, the Disney story, or mm-hmm. we're a culture that talks about anger. You know, it's just like, you gotta like assert yourself. You know, you gotta mm-hmm. you know, speak your mind. You know, you can't be a dish rag. You know, and it's like, you know, it's all good advice under some circumstances, but not under this one.
Well, and it's one of the things that drives me crazy about even our own profession, where we'll tell people it's okay to fight. In fact, there's something wrong with you if you're not fighting. But fighting involves, to me, this criticism, this defensiveness, potentially contempt. And if somebody is really uncomfortable, I mean, I don't know about you, but about half of my clients will attempt to avoid conflict at all costs, which my snappy retort to them is, okay, quit breathing. But, you know, it's stonewalling. So even in our own profession, when we're encouraging people to fight, but fight fair, which of course is what you and I are talking about, and I just don't like the word fight because I can't put any kind of positive spin on that word. we're telling people, well, it's okay to fight. It's okay to be brutally honest. And I tell people you need to be honest, but the brutal is a choice. And so how do we even, I can't be surprised that people are confused about this.
Yeah, it's extremely confusing, especially if you've never been in a relationship that had mostly functional communication, or you weren't raised in a family that had mostly functional communication. Yeah, we certainly, as an industry, have a general advice to people that they should be honest and speak their mind. I don't say that. I say that there are times when you shouldn't speak your mind mm-hmm. because your mind has very dysfunctional things to say, you know. If I spoke my mind all the time, I mean, I would be alone and sad, you know. So it's not a matter of being honest. It's a matter of getting everyone's needs met. You know, you have needs that you want to be met, and your partner has needs that they want met. And how do you communicate in a way that facilitates that? And sometimes that means being honest, and sometimes that means choosing your words very carefully.
Mhm. And I'm a big proponent of being confused and being curious. You know, help me understand, or you know, I was on track until I got here, and then I got lost. And you know, because people really want to be heard and understood, and sometimes because of my experience, I don't understand why this is important to you. And I get that all the time. It's like, well, you know, I don't care about it, so why does this person care about it? It's because they're a different person, and they have different, like you're talking about, they have different needs. And again, we don't necessarily do a very good job unless they've done some reading about Abraham Maslow and his hierarchy of needs, that people don't understand that, oh, you don't experience this the way that I do. Oh, how interesting. As opposed to, you don't experience the way I do. What's wrong with you?
Right. Yeah, that's a fundamental, perhaps one of the final stages of maturity, really, is the, you know, we all grow up knowing that our experiences not necessarily shared by other people. But it is a fundamental paradigm shift that really can help everybody, not only in partnerships, but also in like politics and other kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In terms of like the way I see the world and the way I have experienced the world is really unique to me. And just because I'm confused by, or just because I don't understand something that someone else is doing doesn't mean that it's innately hurtful. And, you know, that's what I was talking about earlier. It's like with you and your partner, mm-hmm. it's like you don't do it that way. You know, you don't remain quiet and think and then much later start talking. And so that just being curious about that, it's like, okay, I have an impulse to label that as he's being a jerk. But because I've realized that my point of view isn't always the point of view, maybe I should take a more curious point of view and say, like, so when you do that, what's going on with you? You know, like,
right.
Because I want to, in my head, it seems like you're being hostile, but I don't know, you tell me. And that's a very useful thing to engage in, yeah, for sure.
Right, and I think that maybe a sign, you know, and I think that something that can help people, and especially now that they have a good definition of what these four things are, is to really take a look at, am I doing these, or is my partner doing these, and how is that impacting our relationship? Because, you know, I tell people, you know, when I do my work, I always start with communication. Good communication is not going to be the magic bullet for a happy relationship, but if you can't communicate well, forget the rest of it, because we're never going to be able to resolve any kind of our challenges, whether it's intimacy or money or dealing with the kids or the in-laws or, you know, you name it, we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do. And it's so easy. I mean, you know, we don't teach communication 101 in at least no place that I know of outside of you're in my offices and are there. You know, it's like you don't get this stuff because we've been talking since we were, you know, 12 months old or something. And what, we have to learn how to do this?
Yeah, and how wonderful would it be if we did have, you know, modules in every grade along these lines, and how much strife we could reduce if we did such a thing, you know? I often rant and rave about that.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's one of those things. I have an imaginary soapbox in my office that I jump up and down on various occasions, and this happens to be one of the things that gets me crazy. So, I mean, thanks so much for bringing the, you know, explaining the Four Horsemen, because I talk about them and I haven't done as good of a job as explaining them as you have. And so where can people find out more about your writings, where they can learn more about the Four Horsemen and the things that you do? Because I know you have a podcast.
Yeah, the main link you can go to is psychologyinseattle.com. That's where most of my links and everything, information, contact, and all this stuff. So psychologyinseattle.com.
Okay, great. So got a couple of questions for you. It's like, are you like the proverbial frog in the pot of boiling water? Have things in your relationship deteriorated gradually or worse very quickly? And do you recognize any of the signs that we've been talking about? And if you've been listening, you know that the good news is that it probably isn't too late to get your relationship back on track. But that can't happen if you do not take action quickly. So the one question you need to answer is, what's your next step? Hopefully, it's to keep listening to this show. So until next week, stay loving.